Hold you, your eyes glowing and Damien's eyes glowing.
Your eyes glowed too, Anita, like brown diamonds in the sun.
I'll take your word for it, but I don't remember it.
You should remember, Anita.
I don't.
Why don't you?
I don't know. He glanced behind him at the other man lifeless in the bed.
I hope Damien remembers more of it than you do. We hit some serious firsts. It would be sad if I was the only one that remembered them.
We need to talk to Jean-Claude, I said.
Why?
Because I don't remember anything, Nathaniel. I mean, nothing after your eyes started to glow.
Everyone's eyes glowed, Anita, not just mine.
I'll take your word for it, but I honestly don't remember. He slipped off the bed and I took a step back. He went very still, his face very serious.
You're not just afraid. You're afraid of me.
I think so.
Why? I would never hurt you, Anita.
Logically, I know that, but this isn't about logic.
No, it's all about emotion for you. I can smell it.
Smell what, my emotions?
Your fear, he said,
his voice calm as if he didn't want to add any more emotion to the situation. It was usually the way that Micah talked to me when I was upset, but I guess we'd been dating enough so that we all knew how to handle each other now.
Anita, I don't know what happened or why you can't remember everything, but if we did get rolled by some bigger vampire, don't do to me what you've done to Sin or Jean-Claude and Richard in the past.
And what is that? What did I do to them? I could hear the fear and edge of anger in my voice.
Let your fear of what happened paint everyone involved with the same issues. It would break my heart if you treated me that way.
I stared into that handsome face and didn't know what to say.
I don't think I'd deal with it as well as they do.
What does that mean? And my voice was still strident with the first stirrings of anger, because it would help chase away the fear.
It means don't blame me or Damien when we got rolled too.
But you remember. If you'd been rolled, you wouldn't remember.
I don't know why I remember, but you and Damien said yes to everything we did. I hate the idea that you don't remember saying yes, and I hope like hell that Damien remembers later.
I glanced at the vampire lying broken-looking in the bed. Can you change his position? He looks broken.
Can it really hurt him to lie like that? He asked.
No, but it just looks uncomfortable. Nathaniel didn't argue, just climbed back onto the bed and moved the vampire until he was lying in a more normal sleeping position. His body moved as only the dead can, boneless and hard to keep where you put it, so that the head kept lolling to one side at that broken neck angle. Nathaniel finally had to use the pillows to prop the vampire's head at an angle that made me happier. Let's go find Jean-Claude. He should be awake by now, I said.
You'll want to at least finger comb your hair, he said, smiling.
I frowned at him. Do you really think I care how my hair looks right now?
No, but you might if you look in the mirror.
I half smiled and shook my head. For you to keep insisting, it must be bad.
Pretty bad. I think we all forgot to put hair care products and conditioner on after we finished the shower part.
You never forget hair care products, I said.
He frowned. True.
Are you sure you remember everything that happened? I asked.
I thought I did, but now I'm not sure.
I reached up and touched my hair, but just feeling it didn't seem so bad. I started to walk to the bathroom, but Nathaniel followed me and I had to stop him. I don't want to be in the bathroom with anyone but me right now, Nathaniel. He looked so sad. I'm sorry, Nathaniel, but until we figure out what just happened, I need a little space.
Don't pull away, Anita.
I want some privacy in the bathroom. I don't think that's asking too much, I said. He nodded and let me walk away alone, but his shoulders slumped forward, every line of him sadder than a few seconds ago. I wanted to run and hug him close, erase all the sadness from him, but I had a right to go to the bathroom alone, damn it. I had a right to a little privacy, a little space, even with him. I closed the door, but standing there in the room where I'd lost time wasn't good. I suddenly wanted out of the room as much as I'd wanted out of the bed. I opened the door and came to stand outside, breathing hard.
Anita, are you okay? Did something happen in the room just now?
I shook my head. going to leave the door open, okay?
Okay. I won't try to come in while you're in there.
Thank you, I said.
I don't know what's wrong, but I don't want to make it worse, he said.
I know you don't. I moved back into the bathroom to look in the mirror and instantly understood why Nathaniel had said something. My curls didn't always look great after I slept on them wet, but this was spectacularly bad, even for me. It looked like I had lopsided horns along with other odd protuberances in between. Just sleeping on my hair wet wouldn't do this. It was like we'd put in shampoo and just left it in, or gotten crazed with hair care products, but never smoothed the hair into place. Once I saw my hair, I knew that Nathaniel didn't remember everything either. He'd never have let me sleep with this much stuff in my hair without helping me neaten it. Nathaniel thought he remembered the entire thing, but he didn't. I did my best to splash water on it and try to help matters, but I finally let Nathaniel in to try to help me. He finally ended by braiding it close to my head with a promise to help me wash it out later. He had to braid his own hair, too. We'd both have to start over with our hair later, but there was no way I was getting back into the shower until I'd spoken with Jean-Claude. I needed to know who had rolled us and why. Some older vampires will fuck with you just to fuck with you, but most of them have a purpose if they torment you. Call it sadism with a reason. I needed to know that reason, and Jean-Claude needed to know there was still someone big and bad enough to roll me that thoroughly, because if they could do that without alerting him to it, then they were serious badasses. Every time we destroyed the great evil, another one seemed to rise up in its place, like an evil version of nature abhors a vacuum. It was almost like the mother of all darkness had kept the other bad vampires in line, and now that she was gone, they were trying their supervillain wings out. I was getting real tired of being the target du jour for them.
Chapter 15. Ma petite, I do not believe that it is an outside force that has cost you time.
Then what was it? I demanded as I paced the room. We were back in his bedroom but had to sit in the chairs around the faux fireplace, because the bed where he usually liked to lounge had been reduced to nothing but the bed frame. The custom-made mattress and bed frame were ruined by the blood that Damien had shed. The cleanup crew that was made up of our own people wouldn't guarantee that they could fix it. It would take weeks or even months to get a custom replacement. He glanced at Nathaniel, who had curled up in front of the electric fire wearing nothing but a pair of silky black shorts and the long braid of his hair.
Cats always find the warmest place in a room, Jean-Claude said.
I wish you would let the electric fire run when we sleep in here, Nathaniel said.
I cannot trust that it will not spark and catch fire while I am unable to save myself.
Modern electricity is a lot safer than it used to be, Nathaniel said.
Jean-Claude nodded.
Logically, yes, but some worries are not about logic.
We have another big bad vampire attacking us, and you're worried about being warm while we sleep. If I were any warmer sleeping between you and Micah, I'd melt.
I'm usually on the end, so warmer would be good for me, Nathaniel said.
How can you be so calm? I asked him. He shrugged and stared at the flickering flames.
The Ardure was fed. We all feel better. Damien is even dead for the day. Nothing seems to be wrong. Why aren't you calmer?
He looked up at me as I paced.
Our pussycat is right about one thing, ma petite. There seems no harm done.
This time no harm is done. But one thing I've learned is that once one of these fuckers starts messing with us, they don't stop until they get bored or hurt us.
Do you agree, pussycat, that whoever did this will not stop until they are bored or hurt us?
Nathaniel shook his head.
I don't think they'll get bored.
I looked from one to the other of them, because I realized I was missing something. What does everyone else in this room know that I don't? They exchanged a look, and Jean-Claude gave a small wave of his hand toward the other man.
Do I have to?
Nathaniel asked.
Yes, mon minet, you do.
What does Nathaniel have to do? I asked.
Tell you the truth.
About what? I asked. Nathaniel hugged his knees to his chest and looked at the floor rather than at me. That was never good.
It wasn't a vampire that mind-rolled you.
Then what was it?
He glanced up.
Don't be mad. I didn't mean to. I didn't know I could.
What are you talking about?
I asked.
You were conflicted about feeding on Damien for the Ardure. You were conflicted about the three of us being together like you always are.
So?
I'm not conflicted.
I know that you'd love it if the three of us were a real threesome, in a sexual way at least.
I don't understand why you don't see Damien as yummier than you do.
His conflicts and mine get in our way, I said.
Mine don't get in my way.
You don't have any conflicts about the three of us being closer, I said.
Exactly.
I frowned at him.
You must be more forthright with ma petite, Nathaniel. You know this.
Nathaniel sighed.
The two of you were letting it all get away from us again, and I wanted it to work, so I made it work.
I frowned harder.
I don't understand.
It is not some outside force attacking us, ma petite, but those inside growing into their power.
I still don't understand.
And then suddenly I did understand, or thought I did.
Wait. You mean that Nathaniel mind-rolled me?
I didn't mean to do that part, but I wanted you and Damien to be with me, for us all to be together.
What did you do?
I asked, coming to stand in front of him. He rounded his shoulders and hunched up.
You looming over me isn't helping.
You're taller than I am.
It is not about physical height, ma petite, and you know this.
Fine, I said, and backed up so I wasn't looming. I stood there, arms crossed under my breasts, trying not to scowl at him and probably failing.
I wanted it to work between us.
Wait. I remember you saying something. I want this, you said.
Yes.
Your eyes were glowing lavender, so it was your power, not some interloper's, because then your eyes would have been the color of whoever was trying to take us over.
Damien's eyes glowed his color, and yours glowed to your power. It was all us. Just us.
I shook my head.
So why don't I remember?
This was his first time being in charge of your metaphysical union, ma petite. I believe he used more power than was needed, but he did not realize that until you had no memory of it.
Did we all have unprotected sex? I mean, did you think to grab a condom for Damien?
Nathaniel looked miserable.
No. I got carried away with it all. I'm sorry, truly sorry about that part.
Normally I would be more angry about that, Jean-Claude said. But ma petite is on birth control other than condoms. Damien is also older even than I am, so it is unlikely that he would be fertile. If you had to make that mistake with anyone, he is a good choice.
Thank you for not being angry,
Nathaniel said.
He's not angry, but I am.
I didn't know I could be in charge of us all. You both simply said yes to what I wanted. I asked for permission several times, and you both said yes.
Yes to what? I asked.
Let's just say that I hope Damien either remembers saying yes to me or doesn't remember anything at all.
I shook my head.
What did you do to our heterosexual vampire boy?
I didn't do anything to him, exactly.
Then what exactly did you do to him?
He turned his head to one side and finally moved his braid to one side to expose more neat fang marks in the side of his neck.
He wanted to have sex again.
So you supplied the blood for the next go-round, I said.
He let his braid fall back over it.
For round two, yes.
How many rounds were there?
I asked suspiciously. He grinned, but the look that went with it said he was far too pleased with himself.
How many, Nathaniel?
He opened his knees and moved his shorts out of the way to show another neat bite on his inner thigh. I reached down toward my leg.
I didn't notice one when I got dressed.
You were pretty upset when you got dressed,
he said, giving a small smile. He was trying not to look happy, but failing. I appreciated the effort not to piss me off more. It wasn't working, but I appreciated the effort.
4 times. Really, 4 times with no condom. That's upping the odds a little too much, Nathaniel,
I said. I let the frown go to the scowl I'd been wanting to have for the last 15 minutes.
It didn't up your chances 4 times, and I don't have to worry about getting pregnant.
What does that mean? I asked. Jean-Claude laughed loud and long, head back, mouth so wide open that he was flashing not just his fangs, but almost every sparkling tooth in his head. I turned the scowl on him. What is so fucking funny?
Ma petite, Nathaniel was gallant enough to use his body to protect yours.
What? I asked.
You and Damien kept saying yes. How was I supposed to know that you weren't sober enough to give permission?
I'd been slow on the uptake because I was angry, and it was easier to just be angry instead of listening. But Nathaniel deserved better than that from me. I loved him, was in love with him, would have married him if I could have married more than just one man. I took in a deep breath and let it out slow, counting my breaths, calming my body to calm the rest of me. Anger and blaming everyone else was easy. It had kept me emotionally safe for years and emotionally isolated. I'd made the choice that I didn't want to do that anymore, which meant I had to choose something else to do. I'd decided what didn't work in my life. I was still working at what to put in its place that did work.
Are you well, ma petite?
I nodded. I'm trying to be. I went to Nathaniel and offered him my hand. He looked up at me, then took my hand.
I'm really sorry, Anita. I swear to you that I thought you and Damien were enjoying everything as much as I was.
I believe you. He smiled and squeezed my hand.
I love you.
I love you more.
I love you most, he said.
I love you mostest, I said, smiling. Usually Micah was there to help us finish the litany, but it worked for just the two of us. I don't know what Damien will think when he wakes up for the night, but I'm okay.
I think, ma petite, mon minet, it will depend on whether Damien received or gave attention.
I received, Nathaniel said. A lot of heterosexual men are willing to do it, but being on the other side of things weirds them out more. I didn't push.
It can be difficult to tell the difference between normal persuasion and vampiric powers at first, Jean-Claude said.
I didn't expect to have vampiric powers, Nathaniel said. I thought only Anita and Damien had powers.
He made air quotes with his free hand when he said powers.
Richard is stronger for being a part of our triumvirate, Jean-Claude said.
He's the leader of the local werewolves. He started stronger, Nathaniel said.
Do not underestimate yourself, Nathaniel. There are different kinds of power. You have done something that Richard has never managed to do.
He's tried to bespell me before, I said.
But never successfully, and this was very successful, Jean-Claude said.
I hope that Damien agrees with the successful part when he wakes up, Nathaniel said.
One problem at a time, pussycat.
My phone rang, and it was Edward's ringtone. Nathaniel squeezed my hand and said,
It's Edward. Take it.
I pulled out my phone and said, I'm here. Ted?
We don't have to pretend right now, he said.
Okay, what's up, Edward?
I told the police you had a vampire that knows the older vampires here.
And?
If you bring him to help us talk to them, the police would agree to you coming in to consult.
I can't agree to Damien coming back into Ireland, Edward. He feels like he barely escaped the first time.
This time we know the vampires are here and real. Damien can come in with the full protection of the police.
You don't know what you're asking, Edward.
I know people are dying, Anita. I know more are going to die if we don't figure out how to stop this.
It's just a bunch of vampires, Edward. You know how to kill vampires. Kill them and get out of there.
The local police aren't letting me off leash much.
What's that mean?
It means that the Irish are having trouble deciding how to deal with the vampires.
Have you found the vampires that are doing this?
Not yet. But when we do, the Irish still don't have a death penalty.
Wait. Are you seriously telling me that when you finally trace these bastards down, the locals aren't going to kill them?
You know better than I do that vampires can become good little citizens, Anita.
Not if they're doing this kind of shit, Edward.
I'll bet if you ask your fiancé what he did when he first rose from the grave, it won't be any worse than this.
Jean-Claude had heard both ends of the conversation, of course. He said,
When the bloodlust first rises, we all do horrible things, unless our masters lock us away for those first nights.
I looked at him while I said to Edward, No one's innocent, I guess, but whoever is doing this in Ireland is killing people now, not hundreds of years ago.
I guess that does make it worse, he said, his voice very dry.
I can't ask Damien to go back to Ireland.
Anita, his old master was so scary that she spooked you. But just a few years later, she's lost enough power that she can't control a bunch of new vampires. What changed?
Damien won't know the answer to that.
No, but he will know more about the local vampires than anyone else here, because he was one of them.
I can't promise that he'll agree to come, Edward.
Aren't you his master?
I won't force him, Edward.
I don't ask for help often, Anita, but I'm asking now.
Has something else happened, Edward?
Two more bodies.
You've seen dead bodies before, Edward.
I'd rather stop seeing them here, Anita.
What aren't you telling me, Edward?
Are kid vampires more likely to attack other children?
Sometimes it's easier for them to subdue them physically. Even modern kids who are warned against pedophiles trust other kids. Crap. The last two victims were kids.
Yes.
Kids are always hard.
You don't have kids of your own yet, Anita. Once you do, you'll understand.
I'm not planning to ever have kids, Edward.
Neither was I.
I think I can avoid dating people who already have a family, I said.
That's what I thought, too.
I'll talk to Damien when he wakes up for the night, but don't hold your breath.
I can send you the latest pictures, Anita. It might change his mind.
I doubt it.
It might change yours.
Me coming was always on the table.
I've been trying to find the older vamps, Anita. It's like they aren't here.
They're there, Edward. I promise you that.
Then help me find them.
Damien won't be awake for hours yet.
Let me know when he wakes up. Maybe I can help persuade him.
Have you and Damien ever had a conversation?
No.
Then what makes you think you can be more persuasive than I can?
Desperation.
You don't get desperate easily, Edward. What aren't you telling me?
I have that feeling, Anita. That feeling that says things are going to get worse.
It wasn't like him to be this spooked. Guard your ass.
Don't I always?
Yeah, you do, but I feel like you're leaving stuff out.
Don't I always?
He said. Yeah, you do, I sighed.
Call me with Damien's answer, he said.
He hung up. Fuck, I said to the phone. What's wrong? Nathaniel asked. More dead in Ireland. Apparently one of the vampires has a taste for kids.
I didn't think vampires attacked children that often, Nathaniel asked.
We do not, Jean-Claude said.
Their throats are so tiny that a good bite can close down the blood supply, so why attack them? I asked.
Ask Edward to send you photos of the new victims. If their throats are intact, and the bites dainty enough, then the new Irish vampires may be breaking one of our few strict taboos.
You mean they're making new child vampires, I said. Jean-Claude gave a small nod. He didn't try to hide the anger on his face.
I am only king of America, but if they are doing this, then they must be stopped. It is forbidden to bring children over for a reason.
As king of America, you have no authority outside this country, right?
The only authority in Ireland was Damien's old master. If she cannot police her country's newest members better than this, then something has gone very wrong.
What could have damaged her power this badly in just a few years? I asked.
You have felt her power from a distance, ma petite, Nathaniel. I have felt her power in person. I can conceive of nothing that could leave her toothless and powerless before any foe, save for the mother herself.
This feels like new monsters, not old ones, I said.
Agreed, ma petite, but powerful new ones.
It doesn't matter if it's old power or new, Nathaniel said. We need to stop whoever is doing this.
Yeah, we do, I said.
We are agreed, Jean-Claude said.
We were all agreed, and that was great. But what we needed was a plan. Edward was asking for help. He almost never asked for help.
One of the scariest vampires around seemed powerless in the face of whatever was happening in her country. Or maybe she just didn't care. I asked Jean-Claude, could she who made Damien just not give a damn?
What do you mean, ma petite?
Could she just not care enough to police the new vampires?
Do you mean, has she given up?
I mean, is she old enough that she just isn't moving with the times? Some of them do that, right? They just refuse to accept change and sort of hide from it all?
It has happened, but in the past, the council did not allow it to disrupt business as usual.
You mean that the Mother of All Darkness would send the Harlequin out to see what was wrong and fix it?
Oui, that is what I mean.
We killed the Mother of All Darkness, and most of the Harlequin work for us now.
That is true, ma petite.
Nathaniel looked from one to the other of us.
Were they doing something that we aren't doing now?
What do you mean? I asked.
Jean-Claude is in charge of the new power structure, but it's not like the old one. It's mostly just us here in America. The old council ran things differently, right?
Nathaniel said.
They were concerned with more of the world than we are, Jean-Claude said.
Have we dropped a ball here, Jean-Claude? Were the Mother and the Harlequin or the old council doing things to keep Ireland moving safely along, and now that we've destroyed their power, did we cause this somehow? I said. He went very still. I knew it meant he was either thinking or hiding what he was thinking.
I do not believe so. But if we wish to know what the council was doing to maintain the status quo in Ireland, we have people here to ask.
The Harlequin, I said.
Our gods now, he said.
Wouldn't the Harlequin have told you if there was something important that needed to keep being done?
Nathaniel asked.
All the Harlequin are older than I am, and there is something about being a certain age that gives you a longer view of things.
Which means what? I asked.
They might not see it as important enough to share until it became a problem.
Even if it cost lives? I asked.
The vampires of the Harlequin are thousands of years old, ma petite. They may not consider human life as valuable as we do.
Then their attitude needs to change, I said.
I would settle for their sharing any important secrets before they become an issue.
We don't know they hid anything about Ireland, I said.
No, that is true. But the old council is disbanded. Their power destroyed and incorporated into our power base. And suddenly, a country that has run seamlessly for thousands of years is in turmoil. At the very least, we should question the coincidence.
If it is a coincidence, I said.
Do not borrow trouble, ma petite. Not everything that goes wrong in the world is our doing.
True, but if we're only in charge of American vampires, who's in charge of Europe now?
If I tried to spread our power over the rest of the world, we will have more battles on our hands. One of the reasons it has gone so smoothly is that I have not fought to rule the world, as it were.
I don't want the equivalent of a vampire world war, but someone needs to be in charge of you guys.
We have been in charge of ourselves longer than humans have known there was a world to rule.
But all that time, the Mother of All Darkness was in charge of all of you, right?
Oui.
Now she's not, because we killed her.
You are wondering what the vampiric mice are doing now that the cat is dead. Is that it, ma petite?
Yeah, that, I said.
They're doing what the mice always do when the cat's gone,
Nathaniel said. We looked at him.
And that would be what, our pussycat?
Destroy everything they can before a new cat comes along.
And we're the new cat, I said.
Perhaps, ma petite, mon minet. Or... perhaps we need to find another cat to rule Europe.
Who? I asked.
I do not know, but I know that I do not wish to rule the world. America is enough for me.
Have we let the monsters loose in Ireland, Jean-Claude?
Let us ask the Harlequins that we trust most. If there is a secret to Ireland's vampire past, they will know it.
Who do we ask first?
Magda,
Nathaniel said. We looked at him.
She's one of our lovers, and she's so blunt it's painful. If there's something she knows, she'll share it. If we ask her without Giacomo at her side.
Are you saying she would obey her vampire master before her vampire king?
Jean-Claude asked.
Let's not make her choose,
Nathaniel said.
Let's just ask her now while she's awake and her master is still dead to the world.
You are growing craftier, Momine.
I had to get smarter sometime, he said.
No. Sadly, some people live for centuries and never become wiser.
I was pretty sure we were all thinking about the same person, but none of us said his name. Asher had been Jean-Claude's on-again, off-again love of his afterlife for centuries. They'd loved and lost the same woman, Asher's human servant Juliana, and neither of them had stopped mourning her. They say love heals all wounds, but if Jean-Claude and Asher are any judge, maybe not. Asher's jealousy issues had led him to make some seriously bad political choices that had almost started a war here in St. Louis between us and the local were-hyenas. That final stupidity had been enough even for Jean-Claude and all of us to dump him. Asher, our golden-haired and sadistic beauty, was now trying to be monogamous with the one lover he had left, Kane. None of us liked Kane, and he returned the sentiment. We all missed parts of Asher when he was behaving himself, but none of us missed those parts enough to forgive this last near-disastrous choice. A war among the preternatural set here in St. Louis, just as Jean-Claude was being the very public face for vampires as good citizens, could have lost the vampires so much, like the new voting rights that grandfathered in all vampires regardless of how long they'd been dead. Less than 15 years ago, a vampire could be killed on sight just for being a vampire, no questions asked. There were still laws in some western states that allowed lycanthropes to be killed like varmint coyotes or rats. You could kill someone, and as long as their blood tests came back positive for lycanthropy, you were justified. One of the things that the Coalition was trying to get changed were laws like that. We were so not free and clear in this country or anywhere in the world. Asher had risked so much more than just us when he'd made his last bad decisions. In the end, that level of carelessness was what we couldn't forgive. Nathaniel sighed.
I'll admit it if either of you will.
Admit what? I asked.
I miss Asher topping me in the dungeon. I even miss sex with him.
If I did not miss sex with Mon Chardonneret, my goldfinch, I would have been done with him centuries sooner.
Fine, fine. I miss him in the bedroom and the dungeon.
What we miss is that we can't find anyone else who tops us like he did, Nathaniel said.
Since I was still working my issues about the whole bondage and submission being an ongoing part of my sexuality, I wasn't sure what to say to that.
The only one I have ever known as talented with such things as Asher is Belle Moore,
Jean-Claude said. I know she tried to contact you and come here after the Vampire Council fell and she had to flee France, I said.
She seemed most confused that I would not allow her sanctuary in my lands.
She thought you'd take her back, Nathaniel said.
She offered that the three of us could be together as of old.
You, Asher, and her?
Nathaniel asked.
Yes.
He looked out into the room, but I was pretty sure he wasn't seeing anything in front of him. I moved to make sure I blocked his line of sight. He looked up at me. His blue eyes looked as black as his hair and the robe he was wearing in the dim light, so that only the paleness of his face and that triangle of chest relieved the darkness of him. I held my hand down, and he took it lightly with just his long, slender fingers. I never asked you at the time. Were you tempted? His lips moved, and it wasn't quite a smile, more like he thought about smiling.
What she offered was a lie, ma petite, as it was always a lie.
You and Asher were her main boys for centuries.
We were her favorite pawns, or perhaps tools. Yes, we were her favorite tools, or weapons, to be aimed at whoever she wished us to seduce, or embarrass, or help her manipulate for her schemes. Belle almost ruled all of Europe once, the true power behind many thrones. The two of us helped her seduce a great deal of the nobility, church officials, anyone in a position of power that she wished to control.
I've been inside your head when you have memories of those days, Jean-Claude. You loved her. You were in love with her.
I was, but she was never in love with me, or Asher. If she was ever able to love anyone, it was not us.
So you weren't tempted?
For a moment, perhaps. but it is like being tempted by a dream. It is not real.
But while you're dreaming it, it can feel real, I said.
She kept us all like addicts, ma petite. We were addicted to her charms. We competed for her love, but as you have said before of others in our lives, it is a rigged game. There is only one winner in any game involving Belmore, and that is Belmore.
Nathaniel unfolded from beside the fire and walked on two legs, but there was something about the way he moved that was very cat-like, as if his human body were remembering a lighter grace, and it was all there as he came to take my other hand and look down at Jean-Claude.
We are a game you can win, he said.
Jean-Claude smiled then and offered his other hand to him. Nathaniel took it, smiling back.
Oh, pussycat. Pussycat, you are right, because all of us are willing to talk about what is true and what we need or want or cannot live without. We do not, what is the phrase, game each other.
You don't game the people you love, I said. He sat up very straight in the chair, still holding our hands while we held each other.
You are quite right, ma petite. Now let us follow the recommendation of our clever cat, and find Magda before her master wakes for the day and she becomes more clever.
She's not stupid, Nathaniel said.
No, but she is not a deep thinker either.
Her body awareness and physical intelligence are amazing, I said.
That makes her an excellent warrior, Jean-Claude said.
And a really physical lover, Nathaniel said.
I felt the first heat of the blush that was creeping up my face. I didn't blush as often anymore, but occasionally. Jean-Claude laughed and kissed my hand.
Oh, ma petite, you never grow jaded. It is one of your many charms.
Dating women is new, okay?
We don't date Magda, Nathaniel said. She's more a bodyguard with benefits.
I drew him into a hug and put my arm across Jean-Claude's shoulders, bringing us into a sort of group huddle. I'm dating as many people as I can do justice to. With benefits is okay. We all agreed with that. Though I hated the concept of with benefits, sometimes it was all I had to offer. If someone didn't think that was enough, they were free to stop being part of our poly group. I'd finally realized that I didn't have unlimited time and energy to date this many people. We were looking at closing our circle and making it closed poly, which meant eventually we'd start saying no. The trick was to figure out who was a yes before the door of possibilities closed. But right now, we needed to figure out what had gone wrong with the vampires in Ireland. Once I'd thought that Damien's master was so powerful and evil that she should be destroyed. And now I was worried about why she wasn't powerful enough to protect her turf. Sometimes evil was in the eye of the beholder, right along with beauty.
Chapter 16.
Jean-Claude had to take a business call, because though he was now head of all the vampires in the country, he was still running his own businesses and finances. Sometimes I forgot that part of what had led him to become king was his ability to do business, but he didn't. It was part of our power base that I was no help at all with. My idea of investments was my 401k plan at work. Nathaniel and I went to find Magda to ask about Ireland, because we could handle that part while Jean-Claude did things only he could do. It was delegation at its best, though usually Nathaniel didn't go with me when I was working on crime busting. But then this really wasn't about the police work. It was more about trying to figure out why a country that had worked fine for eons was suddenly going apeshit. Had Jean-Claude and I done something to fuck it all up? If we had, how did we fix it? If we hadn't, then what had changed in Ireland? Before we could find Magda, Nicky found us first. He was tall, blonde, blue-eyed, and so in shape it was almost intimidating. He wasn't the tallest person in my life, but as he strode toward us down the hallway, he seemed like he was. It was part attitude, and part that his shoulders were almost as wide as I was tall. His biceps strained against the sleeves of his black workout shirt. He was wearing the new shorts that were split up the outer thighs to accommodate men who had awesome, muscled thighs like Nicky. And so they'd have full range of movement in the octagon during MMA, mixed martial arts, matches. I'd seen them first on a pay-per-view match that I'd watched with Nicky and other friends among the guards. My happy-to-see-you smile faded when I saw the outfit. Saturday morning was an informal fight practice. Sometimes there weren't enough people showing up for it, and those of us who did drag our asses out of bed for it ended up just hitting the weight room or the track. There was no reason I knew of for Nikki to be wasting some of the new fancy shorts on a Saturday workout. Nathaniel saved me from having to ask,
"Why are you dressed for a serious fight workout?"
"Why are you awake this early?"
Nikki said with a smile. Nathaniel smiled back and said,
"Hey, I don't sleep all day."
"I thought you'd be tucked into bed between Jean-Claude and Damien for a few more hours at least."
"We had enough sleep," I said.
"Speak for yourself," Nathaniel said.
"You would sleep all day," Nikki said, grinning.
I led Nathaniel forward until I was close enough to touch the other man. He looked down at me with one blue eye, and the other covered by a black eye patch that had a white skull embroidered in the center of it. I let go of Nathaniel's hand so I could reach up and touch the long, thin braid on the right side of his face. It was the side of his bangs that fell in a long triangle down his face, so that his own hair hid the missing eye. It was how he had kept enemies from realizing he was completely blind on that side for real fighting. Werelions fought to the death more than most lycanthropes when they met other groups of their own kind. In fact, they were the animal group most likely to fight savagely within their own group. Every other kind of lycanthrope I knew had traditions that limited serious fighting among themselves. The lions had one of the most vicious cultures of any group, so being a lion who had a blind side was a serious problem. I touched the side of his face, smiling up at him.
"God, you're handsome."
He smiled but shook his head.
"I'm good-looking, but I have Nathaniel, Jean-Claude, Micah, and even Dev to compare to, and they're all prettier than I am."
"Well," Nathaniel said, "I am prettier, but that doesn't mean you aren't handsome."
He flashed that grin, the one that held so much mischief.
"You know I'm sad you're not more bisexual, Nikki, and I only do gorgeous men."
Nikki smiled and shook his head.
"You and I don't think of each other that way, but if I did, you'd be too pretty for me. I like my men more guy-guy. You're prettier than most of the women that I've fucked."
"Oh, Nikki, you always know just what to say to flatter a girl," I said. His eye widened and his other eyebrow rose too, even though there was no eye to widen behind the piratical-looking eye patch.
"You know I didn't mean you, Anita."
I smiled up at him.
"You're my bride, Nikki. You're metaphysically compelled to keep me happy. So that could be a complete lie, so I won't be upset."
His face started to show him trying to think his way through what I'd just said, and then he gave me a more typical, cynical look. He put his arms around me and drew me into a hug. I didn't fight him, just wrapped my arms around his slender waist.
"I can feel your emotions, remember?"
"I remember," I said, smiling.
"Then I know that you are happy with me and enjoying being in my arms, so you're teasing me."
He'd started smiling as he said the "in my arms" part. "Sometimes I wish I could feel your emotions like I could feel Nathaniel's if I lowered my shields and we wanted to share."
"I'm a sociopath, Anita. You wouldn't want to read my emotions or my thoughts most of the time."
"You told me that I was your conscience."
"You are. Your magic keeps me tame, because a bride is designed to do anything to keep their master happy. Acting like I have a conscience pleases you."
"It does." I hugged him around the waist and he flexed his arms just a bit, letting me feel the strength in all those muscles. He could have crushed me easily. If he'd been just human and this in shape, he could have broken my spine in half with little effort. But being a lycanthrope on top of that meant he literally could have crushed me or torn me to pieces, and that was without changing form to have claws and fangs. He tightened his arms around me so that he compromised my ribcage and it was hard to draw a full breath. Nikki liked breath play, and he'd taught me to enjoy it too, but we'd never done it this way.
"I'm in love with you, and that makes any man want to keep a woman happy," he said.
My words were careful because I had to concentrate to breathe enough to talk normally as I said,
"And I'm in love with you, which makes me want to let you make me happy and to return the favor."
His smile changed to that certain one that was part happiness and part evil, or maybe evilly happy. I knew what he was going to do a second before he tightened his arms, and I suddenly had to struggle to breathe. I had enough breath to use my safe word and stop the whole thing, but I didn't. With most people, I'd have told them to stop and been figuring out how to reach my gun. But Nikki was my bit of rough sex and bondage, and I was his, which meant that the sensation of being trapped and fighting to breathe excited me. It made me want to ask him to squeeze tighter, but if I did that, I might not be able to say my safe word, and then I'd be at Nikki's mercy. But like he'd said, he could feel what I was feeling. It literally seemed to cause him pain for me to be unhappy with him, so he would feel if I wanted him to stop. Hands touched my back, underneath where Nikki's arms squeezed around my ribs, and I knew it was Nathaniel. His hands caressed their way down my body until he could trace the swell of my hips and ass. It made me have to close my eyes and shudder, with that first faint preamble to the possibility of an orgasm. It was like the scent of rain on the wind, even though the sun was out. It promised you'd get wet, but the wind could change. But the one and only time I'd allowed the two of them to use a gag while they double-teamed me, Nathaniel had bitten me much harder than I'd been happy with, and he'd absolutely known it when he did it. We now had a hand signal for me to use in case I had trouble talking, but still. Nathaniel pressed the front of his silky shorts against my ass, and even through the jeans I could feel that he was happy to be there. It made me shudder again in equally happy anticipation.
God, Anita, you have the fastest wind-up of any woman I've ever met, and I love it. But Jake is expecting me at the practice. I'm supposed to be helping him instruct the class.
Nathaniel leaned his forehead against my hair, moving his hips back enough so he wasn't pressed against me.
Please tell me that we can do this later.
Oh, yeah, Nikki said.
Maybe,
I said, my voice raspy and almost painful to hear, though it didn't hurt me. I wanted the sex with them, but I wasn't completely sold on doing breath play with my chest being squeezed. I was harder to hurt than a normal human, but I wasn't as indestructible as a lycanthrope. I'd hate to crack a rib because we were doing rough sex and I just didn't understand what Nikki was doing well enough to understand when to call it for sure. We'd need a lot more negotiating and information sharing before we did anything like this for real. Nikki gave me a look. He stopped squeezing me, and my voice was almost normal as I answered that look. I want the sex with both of you, but I'm not sure about having my ribcage compressed while we do it.
Fair enough, he said.
Even I've never had anyone compress my chest for breath play, Nathaniel said.
It would almost be worth it to do something as a bottom in the bedroom that you haven't done, I said, turning my head so that I could offer him a kiss, which he took.
I've been bottoming in the dungeon and bedroom a lot longer than you have, he said, smiling.
I didn't even know I liked bondage and submission, or rough sex until the last few years.
I've always known that I liked bottoming in the dungeon, but I didn't know that I enjoyed topping until you came into my life,
he said and kissed me again. Do you know where Magda is? I asked.
In the gym. I saw her go in as I went to change.
Can you give me 15 minutes?
Why?
I'll change and come to practice. There's a chance I may be going out of the country on a job, and I never know when I'll get to work out while I'm hunting bad guys.
I'll change too, Nathaniel said.
We looked at him.
What? I work out, and you've been forcing me to take at least one fight practice a week.
Fighting is my version of your kitchen, Nikki said.
You're my brother husband. Of course I know fighting is your version of my kitchen. You're the best sous chef I've got.
Nikki grinned.
Well, we wouldn't want you cooking dinner for everyone all by yourself.
Or worse yet, with only Anita to help me.
Hey, I said. Nathaniel hugged me.
I'm sorry, but you really can't cook.
Maybe I just don't want to cook, I said. Nikki hugged us both.
So cute, he said.
I am not cute, I said.
Yes, you are, Nathaniel said. You just hate being called cute.
Short, delicate-looking people don't like being called cute.
Micah hates it, too, Nathaniel said.
Nikki hugged us both and kissed the top of my head, then turned and kissed Nathaniel on the forehead. It made him laugh.
You're the one who says we don't think of each other that way.
We don't, but you hate being left out when the physical affection is being passed around. Nathaniel just smiled because he couldn't disagree.
My love and my brother, if you're going to change for practice, do it quick. This is the first time Jake has asked a non-Harlequin to help instruct. Don't want him to regret it.
We went to our room for our exercise clothes. I wondered how the other Harlequin would feel about Jake choosing Nikki over one of them. Some of them had serious issues with anyone that wasn't Harlequin. The only saving grace was it was still too early for most of the vampires to be awake. The Harlequin were-animals were proud, but the vampires were just downright superior to everyone. They wouldn't take well to anyone making them question that superiority. It promised to be an interesting fight practice.
Chapter 17.
Nikki went ahead so he wouldn't keep Jake waiting, but he agreed to wait for us to get there before the actual practice began if we hurried. Nathaniel and I changed into clothes that we could wear on the practice mat. The braid that he'd done to help me cope with my hair's lack of product and fuzziness was perfect for working out. Magda was at the gym with her blonde hair tied back in a tight ponytail, wearing a sports bra and a pair of jogging shorts that would have made Nathaniel happy, which meant that she was wearing very little. I admit to being a little distracted by the way her breasts mounded at the edges of the sports bra, and the way the tiny shorts fit as she stretched over the long legs that made up most of her 5'10 height. I don't think I'd ever been so distracted by a woman in the gym, but then I'd never been lovers with one who worked out like I did. Something about all that tall, Valkyrie genetics made her muscle up even better than I did, but you'd never mistake her for a man as she stretched out over first one long leg and then the other. In the right clothes, she could dress up and pass for a man, but the clothes that would have allowed that needed layers to hide the curves. Without makeup, her face could be stark, her gray-blue eyes cold, and that was enough to make some people think masculine for a woman, especially a tall woman. But those were people who looked on the surface of things, and that wasn't how I saw most people, and it certainly wasn't how I saw Magda anymore. Sinric was beside her stretching out. His forehead touched his knee, all that long torso bending over the even longer legs. He was 6'3" now. When I'd met him, he'd been 10 inches shorter, but then he'd been 16, and now he was 20. His hair looked black in the gym lights, but in brighter light it was shades of dark blue from navy to cobalt. He got people asking him where he'd gotten such an amazing dye job, but it was his natural color. It was back in a tight ponytail for the workout. He still hadn't figured out how to braid his own hair because it, like the rest of him, had been shorter once. Usually one of us braided it for him, but this morning he'd woken up on his own, in his bedroom down the hallway from ours. His ass looked as nice in his little shorts as Magda's did, but he'd added a pair of compression shorts and a loose-fitting tank top to cover most of his chest, so only the muscled arms and shoulders gave a hint of how nice the rest of the view would be. There were only a few other people stretching out for the workout. The early morning Saturday class was just whoever showed up and wanted to work on things. It meant that you'd have people working hand-to-hand or weapons drills. It all depended on what they thought they needed to work on most, or what they could get someone to help them work on. But today there were enough people for a full class. Nathaniel and I joined the stretching group. If there'd been room, we'd have gone to Magda and Sinric, and used the preparation before class to ask her the preliminary questions about Ireland. But there wasn't room without making people move, and that just seemed rude. I tried not to pull the boss card more than I had to. And I could move us up beside Magda and Sinric when we all lined the edges for drill practice. It wasn't worth making a half-dozen guards stop stretching and move out of our way to do it minutes earlier. Nathaniel didn't like fight practice of any kind, but he'd started coming at least once a week after I insisted. I insisted after he'd ended up having to wrestle a bomber who had planned to kill him, me, and several others we loved. I didn't want him to just rely on his otherworldly speed, strength, and dexterity. I wanted him to have actual fighting skills if he ever needed them again. Wisely, he hadn't argued, just found time in his schedule to do it. He wasn't great at it. It was one of the very few physical activities that he wasn't a natural at. Claudia, who taught the main hand-to-hand class and made Magda and most of the men look tiny, said it wasn't natural skill that Nathaniel lacked, it was the will to win. He just didn't like being that forceful in practice, and nothing she'd been able to figure out seemed to get him out of his own way. He practiced and he improved, but he didn't come to win. Sinric, Sin, wanted to win, but he was usually up against one of the professional guards, and that meant he wasn't going to win no matter how hard he tried. But he kept trying, and in the end, that's what counts. I didn't win much either. The fact that I won occasionally still bothered some of the guards, especially if I was winning against someone who was more than a foot taller than me and outweighed me by 100 pounds of muscle. Magda wasn't one of the people I won against, but a slender figure only a few inches taller than me was stretching out on the mat, too. She was a different story. Pierrette looked almost delicate as she stretched out in the nearly knee-length compression shorts and short-sleeved t-shirt. She never showed much skin in the gym or elsewhere. She was also one of the few of the Harlequin who used the name of her alter ego that used to come with a mask and an outfit that hid everything. The idea behind the Harlequin had been that they were sexless, formless almost, and their outfits had reflected that from capes to clothing that wrapped around or slid into the next piece, sleeve into glove, pants into boot, scarf or balaclava on the face so the mask that hid the middle part covered the last bit of them. Only their eyes had shone out, and some of the Harlequin had gone modern and put mesh or reflective surfaces in the eye holes so that even the color of their eyes had been a mystery. Most of them, including Magda, had gone back to the names they'd had centuries before, their birth names or nicknames. But Pierrette was now simply Pierrette, in workout clothes or in her assassination getup. She hadn't been the first Pierrette among the Harlequin. She had only replaced one who had died. The names didn't change, only the people who bore them. Her dark hair was cut very short, and the strands clung to her triangular face in an almost delicate lace. I was never sure how she got her hair to do something so perfect, and since her hair was baby fine and utterly straight, whatever worked on hers wouldn't work on mine anyway. The fact that she'd styled her hair and put on makeup before coming to fight practice puzzled me, but maybe it made her feel better. Sin had spotted us and wasted a very nice smile our way. He'd been so unfinished when I met him, and now he was all handsome and sexy. I still hadn't made the transition to what box he was in my head, or at least not a graceful one. He put a little more heat into the smile he directed at me, as he moved his clasped hands behind his back in a shoulder stretch that didn't actually go as far as mine did. I bowed my head so he couldn't see the blush that crawled up my face at that last smile from him. He was over a decade younger than me, but that didn't mean he was more flexible. He was more flexible than he'd be when he was older, unless he kept working at it. But even being a were-tiger didn't make him more flexible than I was, let alone Nathaniel. If he wasn't careful, he'd turn into one of those big men who lose flexibility as they gain muscle strength. At 19, it wasn't an issue. But in 5 years, it could be, depending on the training he did. He'd been a track star and quarterback in high school. But with college coming up, he'd had to choose between his sports. Football was winning out because it opened up more chances for scholarships and professional money later. He'd been offered scholarships for track, but not as many, and nothing as close to home as football had offered. I thought he'd go off to college somewhere and this heat between us might cool. Maybe he'd find a nice girl his own age, but he'd made it clear that wasn't part of his plans. The fact that I thought he didn't have a big enough piece of my life to make him happy was my issue, not his. Or so Sin had told me recently. Nikki and Jake walked out of the side room that was both a snack room and a place for the instructors to plan. They were almost the same height, just under 6 feet. Jake looked shorter because he usually rounded his shoulders and just held himself in such a way that he tried not to stand out. His hair was brown, neither too dark nor too light, not too straight but not exactly curly, cut short so that it was in a hairstyle that had been in style for decades and would probably still be in style decades from now. His eyes were a brown that was, again, not too dark, not too light, just medium brown. Even his skin tone was medium. In fact, everything about Jake was medium. He was one of the Harlequin who most made me remember they were the ultimate spies, as well as the ultimate assassins. Jake didn't even look all that perfectly Caucasian. We had Hispanic guards from some of the South American countries and parts of Spain who were as pale as he was, and who probably wouldn't tan any darker. He was the man from nowhere and mostwheres. Jake always made me think he was what James Bond was supposed to be, a man who could walk into most places and go unnoticed, while his stalking horse asked for his martini to be stirred and not shaken. If Jake was the antithesis of Bond, James Bond, Nikki looked like he would have made a great Bond villain with all that muscle on display and the skull eye patch. It was a touch of theatricality that seemed very much like a movie bad guy. I guess if you're as muscled as Nikki, you can't exactly hide that you're a badass, so why try? He could have calmer energy, more like Jake was giving off, in nearly peaceful waves. In fact, Nikki could be nearly neutral, like a good bodyguard that could sink into the background until they were needed. But he wasn't trying to hide today. He radiated attitude that said clearly he was the biggest, baddest thing in the room, period. End of story. It was the same kind of posturing that dogs will do, either as a warning to the other dog or as a way to start the fight. He'd had that attitude when I first met him. It hadn't impressed me then, and it didn't really impress me now. But then I knew he was out of my weight class.